consented to give us his remembrances of Srila Prabhupada, as well as we have some special guests, Abhiram Prabhu and Bharadraj Prabhu, who are with us today. And I've also consented to speak, so first we'll begin with Bhakti Charu Maharaj, please. Set up the mic. Hare Krishna. Feeling a little awkward to be the first speaker when so many very senior godbrothers of mine are here. And anyway, I seek their blessings so that I can glorify Srila Prabhupada properly. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunnavadi Paschatta Deshatarine Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivashadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vansha Kalpatarubhascha, Kripa Sindhu Bhaye Vacha, Patitanam Pavanakya, Vaishnavekya Namo Namaha. I joined ISKCON quite late in 76, when it was very difficult to have any access to Srila Prabhupada. As a matter of fact, when Prabhupada came to Allahabad for Kumbh Mela, we all went from Mayapur. In a bus, we traveled to Allahabad, Prayag. And I was thinking that as soon as I go there, I would immediately go to Srila Prabhupada. And actually, just after dropping my things in the tent, I ran straight to Srila Prabhupada's tent. The tent was walled with the corrugated tin sheets, and there was an entrance. One devotee was guarding the gate, a big-bodied personality. And so when I tried to go in, he stopped me and told me that I should come in the evening, Srila Prabhupada would give darshan. And so I was just walking back. And at that time, Bhavananda Prabhu was going to Srila Prabhupada with a basket full of vegetables that he brought from Mayapur. And he told me, come, I'm going to see Srila Prabhupada. So I ran after him. He was practically running, so I also ran after him. So that devotee, of course, made room for Srila Bhavananda Maharaj to go in. I also followed. And from outside the tent, I saw Srila Prabhupada was sitting behind a desk. It was in semi-darkness. I could see him inside the room. So from outside, I offered obeisances. And so when I tried to go in, Rameshwar Prabhu was sitting there. He was Prabhupada's secretary at that time. So he stopped me and said, Prabhupada is taking prasad, and I said, I should go in. So again, very disappointed and really cursing myself why I was offering the obeisances from outside. I could have gone inside with Bhavananda and offered obeisances. Anyway, so I left and I realized that it's very difficult to approach Srila Prabhupada, and I could understand that at that time Srila Prabhupada had about 10,000 followers, about 6,000 initiated disciples. And so I just submitted myself to other activities, mainly book distribution. And book distribution at that time in Kumbh Mela was very ecstatic. People were very readily taking books. We had only a few Hindi books, small books. So we are distributing. And in the evening, when I came in, I saw Prabhupada already started to give darshan. And the tent was packed. So I somehow went in, and I, for the first time, I actually saw Srila Prabhupada. And then a few days, Prabhupada was there, and we were distributing books. I never really made any effort to go near Srila Prabhupada. Then one day, one morning, we got the news that Prabhupada decided to leave. And so just accepted, well, Prabhupada is going to leave. And it was quite a sudden decision by Srila Prabhupada. Actually, he was not feeling very comfortable because the place was quite noisy at night, even blaring loudspeakers and all kinds of things were going on. So in the morning, after we took breakfast, Bhavananda came to me and told me that Prabhupada decided to leave that night. And I told him that I heard already. And he told me that a small team will be traveling with Srila Prabhupada, and a small group of devotees will be traveling with him. And I had been included in that group. So I literally started to dance in ecstasy at this good fortune that I would be traveling with Srila Prabhupada. And so at night, the train started. So it was about 9 o'clock. So it was a Calcutta-bound train. And a first-class carriage was hooked into that train. And that was meant for Srila Prabhupada and his entourage. And so after the train started to leave, started to move, we took rest. In the morning, after taking my bath, I was chanting. Bhavananda Prabhu came to me and said, "Come, I'll take you to Srila Prabhupada." Now, all these days, all these months, actually, I was dying to meet Srila Prabhupada. But when he came and told me, "Come, I'll take you to Srila Prabhupada," I felt kind of, I'm not qualified to go near Prabhupada. I had some feeling that I just kept on sitting there without moving. So really he understood. So he got me by my hand, dragged me through the corridor, opened Srila Prabhupada's compartment's door, and pushed me in. And I offered obeisances to Srila Prabhupada. When I got up, I saw Prabhupada was looking at me, and he asked me to sit next to him. There were Indian first-class compartments, those days had two seats facing each other. And the other seat, there was Rameshwar Maharaj at that time, he was Sannyasi, Jayapataka Maharaj, and Bhavananda Maharaj. Abhiram Prabhu was there at that time. And so I told Prabhupada, "I would rather sit on the floor." Prabhupada said, no, you sit here. So I rolled up the blanket that was spread over and I sat down. And after some initial exchanges, Prabhupada told me, "You translate my books into Bengali." And it was my greatest good fortune that I got a service like that. And that gave me the access to Srila Prabhupada anytime, because I had the excuse that I have translated and I have to show it to Srila Prabhupada. And of course, at that time, nobody even questioned. Prabhupada was in Calcutta for a few days, then he went to Bhubaneswar, and then Prabhupada came to Mayapur. And when Prabhupada was in Mayapur, one day he called me and he gave me a stack of Bengali letters, and he asked me to reply those letters. I used to read out the letters. Prabhupada used to tell me how to reply. I used to make a rough draft and read them out to Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada used to correct. And then finally, I used to handwrite those letters on Prabhupada's letterhead, and Prabhupada used to sign them. So when I finished the Bengali stack of letters, Prabhupada gave me a hint. Prabhupada asked me, "Can you write in Hindi?" I said, "Yes, Prabhupada, I can write in Hindi, but my handwriting is not so nice." Prabhupada said, "Nobody's Hindi handwriting is not nice." And he told me a joke at that time. Somebody wrote a letter to a friend, and when the friend received the letter, he wrote back saying, "Please, when you write to me next time, send me the train fare to go to you." So his friend asked, "Why is that?" And he said, "Because what you wrote, I have to figure out what you wrote, I have to go back to you." And in this way, Prabhupada sometimes used to make some jokes. And anyway, this actually gave me the access to Srila Prabhupada. And when I was replying the Hindi letters one day, one afternoon, Prabhupada told me that he was appointing me as his secretary for Indian affairs. And he called Tamal Krishna Maharaj and told him about this appointment. And he asked me, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, that I should move into with him in the secretary's room. So that created another good fortune for me to be with Tamal Krishna Maharaj in such a... And I was very fortunate to kind of be trained up by him. Like, he was so disciplined, so organized, and so Prabhupada conscious. Every morning he would wake up and he would play the tape, go to the bathroom, and he would listen to Prabhupada's tape. And with the sound of Prabhupada's tape lying on bed, I used to listen to Prabhupada also. And anyway, so then Prabhupada decided to go to Bombay. And so Bhavananda told me, just came to me and said, "Look, in Mayapur you have so much to do, and you should stay in Mayapur, you shouldn't go with Srila Prabhupada to Bombay." And although it broke my heart, he had already done so much for me, I couldn't say anything. I just silently accepted. And he was explaining to me how service in separation is greater than service in union. So I just accepted it. The day before Prabhupada was leaving, in the morning Prabhupada asked me, "Aren't you coming?" So I said, "No, Prabhupada, Bhavananda Maharaj asked me to stay in Mayapur because there's a lot of service here. And he also told me that service and separation is higher than service and union." And Prabhupada said, "That may be, but when your spiritual master is asking you to do something, I think you should do that." I just ran to Bhavananda and told him. And he said, "Well, if Prabhupada wants that, then you have to go with him." And jokingly I told him, and Prabhupada told me to pay for my fare also. And so I came to Bombay with Srila Prabhupada. And that time, I'll just try to make it short instead of getting details. There I was serving Srila Prabhupada, and Mother Palika was cooking for Srila Prabhupada. And she used to cook, and I used to serve Srila Prabhupada. So one day she was sick, and so another god sister of ours were asking to cook for Srila Prabhupada. But when I served, I could see that Srila Prabhupada was not able to eat. So I asked Srila Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, the cooking was not all right." Prabhupada said, "No, she doesn't know how to cook." So I blurted out, "Srila Prabhupada, should I cook for you?" He said, "Yes, you can try." So the next morning, Srila Prabhupada told me what to call me and told me what to cook, how to cook. And I cooked, and Srila Prabhupada liked it. And from that day onwards, I had the good fortune of cooking for Srila Prabhupada. Now, one day in Bombay, two very important persons, one was the ex-governor of Madras, Sriman Narayan, and his brother-in-law, who was the chairman of Bajaj Industries, a very big industry. And so they came to see Srila Prabhupada. They were quite close to Srila Prabhupada. Often they used to come and meet Srila Prabhupada. And so they, when they saw that Srila Prabhupada's health condition was not so good, so they suggested that Srila Prabhupada went to Rishikesh on the bank of the Ganges, and probably that would help him. Prabhupada also liked the idea. He used the expression, yes, the change will be good. And he also told that he never went to Rishikesh before, so he would like to go there. And these two gentlemen, they arranged the best house in Rishikesh called Ganga Darshan, right on the bank of the Ganges. Those days, that was the most beautiful house in Rishikesh. So we went there, and a small group was there, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, myself, and Upendra Prabhu, who was Prabhupada's personal servant, three of us, with Tamal Krishna Maharaj's assistant, Gauridas Pandit Prabhu. We traveled by plane with Srila Prabhupada, and already Trivikram Maharaj, Pramana Swami, and Biraha Prakash Swami were there. They made the arrangements for Srila Prabhupada going there beforehand. And so for a few days, Srila Prabhupada stayed there, Rishikesh. But one night there was a big storm. Not night, during the day, there was a big storm, and like the electric poles broke, and there was no electricity. So that night, Srila Prabhupada called me. I used to be with Srila Prabhupada. One of us used to be with Srila Prabhupada all the time, even at night. So my shift was from 12 to 2 at night. And we had to stay there, and we had to be awake just in case Prabhupada needed us. So at about 1 o'clock, Prabhupada rang the bell and called me. So I went, and Prabhupada told me, the time has come for me to leave my body. I want to leave my body in Vrindavan. Please take me to Vrindavan immediately. I mean, I just kept on trembling hearing that, and just I ran downstairs, woke up Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and told him what Prabhupada said. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj also came running upstairs, and Prabhupada told the same thing to him. So that night only we packed up everything, and the next morning we all left. We stopped in Delhi on the way, and for that night. The next morning we drove to Vrindavan, and the devotees were ecstatic that all of a sudden Prabhupada is coming to Vrindavan, but they didn't know why Prabhupada was coming. So the devotees were ecstatically received Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada had the darshan of the deities. Then he walked into his quarters with all the devotees following him. And then Prabhupada announced why he came. And I could literally see how ecstasy could transform into agony. Like, and Prabhupada started to explain, quoting the verse, Dehi nashmin jatha dehe komaram jovanam jara. Prabhupada pointed out, tatha dehantara prapti. It's the rule of nature. Like at some point, we have to leave our body. But dhiras tatra namuyati. Those who are situated in knowledge, they don't become bewildered. And then when everyone left, Prabhupada called me and he told me, from now on you don't cook for me and don't force me to eat anything. What's the point in eating when there is no appetite? And at the back of my mind, I could see now Prabhupada is actually going to prepare to leave his body without eating. And so I went to Tamal Krishna Maharaj. We were staying in a room upstairs in a guest house. Him and I were sharing that room. So I told him, and he sat there silently on the floor, both of us, and he just told me, at a time like this, we don't know what to do. And then the devotees started to come in to Vrindavan. Tamal Krishna Maharaj called Adikeshava, also another sannyasi at that time in New York, and he told him what Prabhupada has decided. And he wanted him to inform everybody, all the senior leaders. And they started to come into Vrindavan. And then they had a meeting with Srila Prabhupada among themselves. I couldn't go there into the meeting because I was attending Srila Prabhupada at that time. And after the meeting, they all came into Prabhupada's room. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj presented to Prabhupada that they're so young in the spiritual life. If Prabhupada left, they would become orphans. And they wouldn't know what to do, how to carry on. And then Prabhupada said, okay, then I'll stay. And, well, I think many other devotees also have to speak. So, I will stop here. Thank you all very much.
Abhiram Prabhu could speak. So. Yeah, please. And then after that, Bharadraj Guru.
Srila Prabhupada manifested so many wonderful qualities in his disciples. And as I sit with all of you, I feel deep gratitude that you will allow me to share with you today, and that I get to hear from you all as much as possible. And very pleased to hear my esteemed godbrother, Bhakta Chiruswami. The entire period of time that Srila Prabhupada was preparing to leave was a great instruction in toto. Of course, it was nothing more than a continuation and a summation of what he had taught us from the very beginning. This is one of the characteristics, 64 characteristics of a pure devotee. It's consistency. There was complete consistency. Sometimes there were surprises. We didn't always understand. But in a short period, when we grasped the point, we saw again consistency. So I was more or less in that period also. With Bhakta Trumaraj. Sometimes I was in Calcutta and he was with Prabhupada. And sometimes we were together in the same place with Srila Prabhupada. And I'm still very inspired by Bhakti Shruswami, as he reminds me of those days. Srila Prabhupada was very affectionate with all of us, and trying to ensure that we were prepared, as Maharaj had just mentioned. We kept asking throughout those last months to please continue, please stay. And he was constantly making the effort to extend his life, even though he didn't have any personal enthusiasm to stay in that body, as the body became quite disturbing to him. Srila Prabhupada was very much a lion personality, very active and very, really very aggressive in a sense for conquering and preaching Krishna consciousness. And when he felt limitations, that was the one thing that would disturb him, if he was limited in his preaching. So, that whole period of time, I think, can be summarized in that mood of him prepared to leave, taking the symptoms as a sign that Krishna was calling him, and us begging him to stay. I was forwarded a text from Srila Prabhupada in that time period, and I do recall Srila Prabhupada saying this, and I think this summarizes his mood and the final lessons. This was spoken on the 17th of May, 1977, in Vrindavan. And I would call it his departing blessings, although he carried on for some time, but the theme continued exactly in this mood. Srila Prabhupada says here, "If death takes place, let it be here. There's nothing to be said new. Whatever I have to speak, I have spoken in my books. Now try to understand it and continue your endeavor. Whether I am present or not present, it doesn't matter. As Krishna is living eternally, similarly, living being also lives eternally. But one who has done service to the Lord lives forever. So you have been taught to serve Krishna, and with Krishna we'll live eternally. Our life is eternal. The temporary disappearance of this body doesn't matter. Body is meant for disappearance. So live forever by serving Krishna." I think you can all understand how that is really the substance of Srila Prabhupada's teachings. And in his departing period, that was what we learned. That is what we heard again and again in so many different ways, in his actions, in his attitude, in his words, that he never showed anything but courage and enthusiasm to meet whatever fate the Lord had arranged, whatever plan the Lord had for him. He never lamented, except that he had not taught enough, that he had not established Varnashram. So only that he couldn't do more. And when we would ask him to stay again and again, even when it was far beyond realistic in the last few months to ask him to stay, again he would say okay, and he would try. But he knew that he was being called, and as Maharaj related the comment about eating, Srila Prabhupada also had said to me, lying in his bed in Vrindavan in the last few months, his on his back, so his hands were pointing to his body like this. He said, when my father was like this, he refused food until he expired. I will also do this. So he was he was not conquered by death in any way. Rather, he conquered by surrendering to Krishna. He became victorious. And he lives now in all of you. He lives now in his books. And the impact he's had on the entire world continues to live. So he conquered death. Even in death. Such is the nature of a devotee. He is not defeated. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you.
Bharadvaj Prabhu, followed by Tamahar Prabhu.
Mukham karoti vachalam pangum langate girim yatripa tamahang vande sigurum dinataran manchakal paturubis chakripa sindhu nevacha patitanam pavadi vyo vaisnavi vyo namo namah. I also feel very unqualified to speak before you. But since I've been asked, I will try to say something. When I first was introduced in Srila Prabhupada's presence by a dear friend and a great devotee, Hamsaduta Maharaj, I was very unprepared. So much so that I was pretty speechless. And didn't know how to act, what to say. Pretty much overwhelmed by his presence, or being in his presence. But the very first time I saw him, it was a very intimate mood, a very intimate little gathering in Boston, in Glanville Avenue. And when I saw him, he was sitting by the window on a simple table with a large volume of Srimad Bhagavatam open in front of him. And he did not look up. as the devotees came in, just a handful. And so there was just this moment of just seeing him and appreciating his beauty. He hadn't shaved for some days, and his hair, white hair, had grown out. So altogether, his appearance, his face, looked like a flower. He was just glowing, white petaled presence. And I thought to myself, this is my father. This is the father that I had been waiting to see. That was the feeling. The feeling was of just complete appreciation. A recognition of his eternal, of an eternal relationship. But then after a while, I saw that his eyes were moving, but paying attention to the way his eyes were moving, I thought maybe at first it seemed like he was reading, but his eyes were moving not in the way that you would imagine that he would if he were actually reading. They were kind of moving in a round, more random way. After a while, he looked up and he said, you see, Krishna has awarded independence even to a small ant. So apparently he was watching. There was an ant moving on the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada was simply fascinating, watching it moving freely here and there, appreciating the fact that such a small creature was awarded complete independence to move wherever it wanted to go. And then he said, how can anyone claim, how can any scientist claim to understand anything about life? How can anyone claim to know the meaning of life? A scientist cannot even produce a blade of grass. And Krishna has created innumerable living entities with complete freedom to go wherever it wants. So that was the first lesson. Seeing Prabhupada's immense compassion and love for all beings, and his great mood of wonder, always mood of wonderment about Krishna's creation. After some time, devotees that had gathered there, and there were more things said, which I don't remember in detail. But then after some time, it seemed like there was only myself and Hamsadutta were left in the room, because Hamsadutta had the idea that he wanted to somehow introduce me to Srila Prabhupada more personally, because he had a plan, so which I didn't know, and so he introduced me and he said, Srila Prabhupada, or Swamiji actually. Prabhupada was not yet in use at that point. He said, this boy is an artist. He's a painter. And so, because I had done some work when I first came to the temple, and Hansugut engaged me in designing the cover of Easy Journey to Other Planets. That was my first attempt at doing some service for Prabhupada. And he thought that it was used. It was a very simple publication. It was kind of a Xeroxed, mimeographed, actually. Even Xeroxes did not exist yet at that time. So they had a mimeograph machine, which was like a simple printing press. So he announced this. And when he said that, I felt so shy and unqualified and actually somewhat frightened that such an introduction was being made. And Prabhupada lit up, and his face was just, he became so happy to hear that. And he was smiling, and he said, "Yes?" And I actually didn't answer because I really didn't know how to answer. But he said, "So you can help to do painting for my books. Would you like that?" Again, I didn't know how to answer. So he said, "My Jadarani, who is now the main painter, she is not well these days. She needs help. Can you help?" And finally, when being asked that way, I think I said something to the effect of, "I will try." But it still did not compute that actually I was being asked to do the service directly by Srila Prabhupada. So the next moment, Hansudutta said, "He would like to be initiated." And when he said that, my brain just exploded. And I thought, what am I getting myself into here? And it was very confusing, because suddenly I realized that this was the most important moment of my life, and a great decision had to be made. And it seemed like the decision had been taken away. Hansudutta made the decision somehow or other and presented this to Srila Prabhupada. I had never said anything to the effect. And then I just thought, well, this is it then. This is the great destiny that has come. And Prabhupada said, "Yes?" Like it was a question. In other words, he was looking to me to see whether I really wanted initiation. And I said, "Yes." Shiva said, "Very good." And the initiation actually took place just a few days later with a number of other candidates. Not only that, but a few days after that, a marriage took place. Everything just came like an avalanche. The avalanche of Guru's mercy. So many things happened. The painting service, the challenges, the first attempts at trying to understand how to perform that service by someone who is clueless, completely unschooled, unprepared, ignorant. What does that mean? How can one even have the courage to move forward, to actually do something on that level, the level of direct service? So Prabhupada was giving us the opening the way, just opening the door and saying, step through and have the courage and allow Krishna to use you, allow me to use you, to let Krishna's will to manifest through you, and allow Krishna to appear. Just get out of the way and let Krishna use you and be a channel, be a transmitter of his mercy and his presence. And with that, a great spiritual world. It was inconceivable to be able to be in that position and at the same time to be kind of not be in that position and just allow Prabhupada and Krishna to do the miracles, perform the miracles. One of the very first things that Prabhupada actually asked me to do, well, second thing he asked me to do, first thing he asked me to do is show him that I was actually capable of doing the work. And so, and one of the early morning's visits to Srila Prabhupada, in his room, he took a picture of Lord Chaitanya from his desk and handed it to me, and he said, "Draw this." It was a test. So I thought, well, I'll give it my best. I'll try. I stayed up all night trying to do justice. It was a small picture, but I took a large sheet of paper and worked on it for many, many hours through the night. And in the morning, I didn't know how to even to present it to him, so I rolled it up. It was like a rolled up scroll. And after some time, so actually other devotees, painters, there were a few who were already engaged along with Jadarani, painting under her direction, and I was not yet under her direction, but I was soon to be, obviously. Wife, my new bride, Rukmini Devi, was also there. She was also working on a painting of under Chaturani's direction, and so all these painters had come and placed their works there, and one by one Prabhupada would look at them and make some small comment. For the most part, he seemed happy with the work that was going on. Rukmini had was also working on a beautiful little painting, a miniature reproduction of a Kangra miniature. Radha and Krishna were meeting in this grove, and coming out from two sides of banana trees, and over the head it was a bright moon. It was kind of a dark, muted scene, and only Radha and Krishna were bright, lit up by the moonlight. And I thought, this is such an exquisite vision, full of rasa, full of longing. And I was just fascinated by this painting that she... It's this first time, actually, I had seen it. And we were just married a few days ago. And so Prabhupada looked at the painting. And in general, he was just appreciating. Not many words were used. And then he looked at me, and I was standing there with this rolled up paper drawing. And he indicated with his eyes, what is that? So then I put it on his desk, and he began to unroll it. He put his left hand on fingers on the bottom of the scroll and began to push it open with his fingers. And he said, he wasn't saying anything. He just looked. At first he saw Lord Chaitanya's feet, and his eyebrows went up. And he rolled it up a little further, and he saw the body and watched down his hands out here. And his eyes opened. And then he finally rolled it up all the way up, and big, huge smile lit up on his face, ear to ear, all these teeth. And, you know, he was looking at it and you know, waving his hand. And he said, ah. He said, I think the husband is better. I cannot imagine what was going on with Rukmini at that time. But I thought, okay, that's something. And that was the beginning. That was the beginning of our transcendental competition match. But what happened in the years that followed was something really wonderful. Because I realized that there was so much that Prabhupada was giving through this service or through this opportunity, that I was actually beginning to see the scope of Prabhupada's vision. And the great way in which all the secrets of the Gaudiya Vaishnava culture were going to be inundating the world in a short time to come. the importance of this work of actually visualizing and disclosing the Leela, the great revelation in the world, both of Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that it is going to be a complete conquest, a great conquest of a cultural conquest of this world, and that somehow that the artists that Prabhupada had engaged in this process were a great asset and a great instrument. So it became a very important and all-consuming task, work, service. And then one day he came, this was in 1973, many things had happened. The great press, ISKCON Press, had grown, and so much printing of the works, of paintings, and so many painters had joined the art department, and so much work was being churned. Pushkar Prabhu came, and others. Let's see if anyone else is here who was there. But the art department had grown to become this, what felt like this great wing. Srila Prabhupada's, it was the ISKCON Press and the art department. And these were the great wings of the spreading of Krishna consciousness in the world. But right in the midst of all this, Srila Prabhupada suddenly announced that he wanted someone to go to India, to Mayapur, to study doll making. So this was an incomprehensible announcement. There were several devotees present and painters at that time. And Srila Prabhupada began to explain what he had in mind. But no matter how, he went on for some time explaining how expert those artists were in Mayapur and in Bengal, how quickly they could make beautiful figures, and how I think even at that time he did not say much more about it, the ultimate purpose of it. Of course, it was understood that it was for the purpose of creating figures, deities. But there seemed to be a kind of a great sense of urgency about it, there was something he was not fully revealing yet, but he was giving a hint. And again, he asked who would go. He looked around. I think there was maybe a dozen artists sitting there at the time. And again, no one volunteered. I think everyone was thinking, well, why should I go? You know, I've got this great gig here, you know, serving Srila Prabhupada with these paintings. So Prabhupada just suddenly turned to me and said, Bharadraj, you will go. And that was it. And from that point on, it all became about doll making. It took some time and for it to sink in and to actually accept. And even there was some lack of understanding, and at that time I was even discouraged by some other personalities who thought that perhaps I did not understand. Anyways, eventually it did go after Prabhupada told me, you must go. I asked him again, he said, you must go, this is business. I said, do you know what business means? He said, no, Srila Prabhupada. He said, business means do it right away. And so I went. Actually, not by myself. Rukmini and I both went. Many things happened. And it was eventually revealed that this was a great service that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati had imparted to Prabhupada. As a means to spread Krishna consciousness to the people. He said, without reading books, they will understand everything. So in those last days, this was the main topic of exchange between Srila Prabhupada and myself. At that time, a great project was being planned under his inspiration, instigation, and request that a great exhibit would be built in Washington, D.C., Srimad Bhagavatam exhibit, with a planetarium in a center and exhibition, Srimad Bhagavatam exhibitions all around. If you can do it in Washington, D.C., he said, that would be very good. Everyone will recognize the importance of Krishna consciousness. You will do more than Columbus, he said. So that was those were the last words that I heard from Srila Prabhupada.
Jayata Mahaprabhu, and then Shruti Rupa will follow because she has to cook after.
Om Gyanat Varandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksurun Vitamina Tasma Shri Gurve Namaha Jai Shri Prabhupada. I feel very fortunate today that we've had three very distinguished senior guests and who have given us such a wonderful explanation of their experiences with Srila Prabhupada and what he means to us. And particularly we got a flavor of Prabhupada's last days and months, especially with Abhirama Prabhu and Bhakti Charuswami. I remember I always regretted that because leaders were asked to come at that time, I was actually scheduled to go to Vrindavan, but we were coming up close to the Christmas marathon time, and my leader at the time felt I was needed to stay and do that, so I missed that being there with Srila Prabhupada at the end, but I think that's probably also Krishna's arrangement. So anyway, thanks. Thank you so much. And I know you could speak for hours about your path, all your experiences. I just want to read one real quick thing. This is from a lecture Srila Prabhupada gave on his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj's disappearance in 1977. Prabhupada said, just like the sun is in the sky, but we see in the morning it appears, in the evening it retires. That is the defect of our eyes. The sun is always there. Similarly, a Vaishnava means a confidential servant of Krishna. He also comes for some purpose by the order of the master. So their life and Krishna's life, it is the same. There is no question of past, present, and future. So they are the same thing, appearance and disappearance of the sun. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, our master, he also came to this world to execute some mission of life, or mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he executed, and when it was required, he left this place and went to another place to do the same business. Just like the sun rises at 6 o'clock and 7 o'clock, there's 6 o'clock in another place, and 8 o'clock in another place. So it is going on, Nitya Lila. So we have nothing to lament for disappearance. So obviously everything Srila Prabhupada said about his guru, Maharaj, applies to us. And so we don't lament in a material sense, because we do philosophically understand that the disappearance is just as glorious as the appearance of the spiritual master. But it is natural to feel some sadness, and as our distinguished guests were relating some of those last days, I think all of it caused some little pain or little something within the heart, thinking of Srila Prabhupada, especially him suffering, although to him, of course, there was no suffering. But anyway, and I'm very appreciative of the devotees that were there and took care of Srila Prabhupada. And Avi Rama Prabhu would not say it, but I think he was Prabhupada's personal nurse there at the end. And I've always been very, very grateful that you did that for Srila Prabhupada, as well as your service, Maharaj. So thank you. So today we want to focus on the glorification of Srila Prabhupada, and also remember those very wonderful, exciting, and enlivening things that happened while we were with Srila Prabhupada. So I'm just going to give a few of my personal experiences. Some of you heard them all, but I only have a few. But I think it's been a few years since I've told some of these. One thing about Srila Prabhupada is he always challenged us to greater results and to always to be increasing. Now, I don't know, Aviramba can correct me if I have this wrong, but I remember when before Srila Prabhupada came to Miami, I think we were distributing like 10,000 back to Godheads or something. You've got this huge truckload, and we were out distributing back to Godheads like anything. And then Srila Prabhupada said, "Oh, that's very nice, but what about my big books?" So again, he challenged us. Okay, we thought we had really done a lot, but now he challenged us. Now big books. So I think then we just started distributing big books also. And that was the kind of thing it was with Prabhupada. And of course, we all remember the Chaitanya Charitamrita marathon, 17 books in 2 months. This is the way that Srila Prabhupada inspired us. And we, although we were very unqualified, very young, we really did some fairly amazing things only on the strength of Srila Prabhupada's inspiration. He also managed very carefully and wanted us to attend to details. Prabhupada's attention to detail is legendary, of course, and I can think of a couple examples I saw. And also to be very careful. And when Prabhupada came to Potomac, Washington, D.C. in 1976, we had a fairly new place, so there was a lot of preparation needed. And our temple president spent a lot of money, to the fact that we were in debt for years afterwards, to be honest, and we were out collecting it forever to, because, you know, the temple president wanted to make a good impression, naturally, on Srila Prabhupada. He did things like bought $3,000 worth of gardenias imported, and you all know those only last a short time, so half of them, you know, wilted before we could use them. He also had these wonderful chandeliers. Beautiful. They're still there, I think, in Potomac Temple. And when Prabhupada came in, he sat down, he looked at him. He said, "How much did you spend for those chandeliers?" And the temple president, I was there next to him, he says, $5,000. That was a lot of money. This is 1976. That was a lot of money for a new temple. Srila Prabhupada said, "Be very careful how you spend your money. This is Krishna's money." So even though it was in the temple room, glorifying Krishna, Prabhupada still warned us to be very careful. And in terms of detail, one thing was interesting. There was a pole, electric pole, and a transformer, and there was this little red light, which I never noticed. Nobody noticed. Prabhupada said, "What does that red light mean?" We didn't know. He says, "You should find out." Well, we didn't pay much attention. I think that was July. It was actually the 4th of July when Prabhupada came. Then about a month later, we had our Janmashtami celebration. And, you know, we had a huge thing going on. We invited a lot of people, lots of guests, and we had electric lines running everywhere. You know, of course, using a lot of electricity, probably. What happened? The transformer blew out in the middle of it. So Srila Prabhupada not only notices detail, but he obviously could see the future to some degree that we couldn't. And we learned you had to be, when Prabhupada noticed something, we should notice it and attend to it, because it's usually pretty important. We had put in a new bathroom for him in his quarters, and he was looked like he was wanting to be very careful that everything was done right. And we thought, well, it's brand new. Srila Prabhupada says, yeah. He looked very suspicious. So he said, get me some chapati dough. And he rolled it up, we brought it, and he put it in the toilet and flushed it to make sure it worked. He said, the last place I went, the toilet was plugged up. And of course, as would happen, Prabhupada was not in the bathroom, but the brand new sliding glass shower door fell out and broke in it. So, in other words, Prabhupada's warnings, you know, were real. And we, of course, paid no attention. We think we're doing everything right. And we learned a lot from that. Prabhupada was also unpredictable. I think Abhirama mentioned he was consistent, but not always predictable. I think, he was consistent in his character, in his mood, in his steadfastness, in his service to Krishna, but you never knew exactly what he was going to say and do. And that was part of the excitement of being around Srila Prabhupada. When Prabhupada was in Miami, we had these beautiful banyan trees, and Prabhupada decided to give Bhagavad Gita class at night under the trees, and it was really nice, and lots of guests came, and we were all sitting under these, you know, hundreds of feet of banyan trees. And I just remember a few things. So one time, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Srila Prabhupada said, actually, all of you have come from Prasadam. Then he turned to Abhirama and says, you too? Yeah, so I got it. So, I mean, that was interesting. All of us have come because of Prasadam. You know, we probably thought we were intellectuals or something. And no, it's Prasadam. Also, there was one boy that was... everyone who was around in those days knew that we got a lot of unstable people came to our temples. That was just normal. We expected it. You expected a few we call the crazies, we commons. Some of them actually became devotees, and some of them did not. We had this one, I don't forget his name, but he was definitely a little off, and he was always seemed very agitated. And he said, ask you the Prabhupada. When Prabhupada asked for questions after the Bhagavad Gita class, he says, Prabhupada, why do we have to follow the regular principles? Bizarre question. And Prabhupada said in a voice that almost physically knocked him back, to keep you from going to hell. Not the answer I would have expected, but the boy was like totally shaken, and he knew he was talking about him. So things like that were always interesting. When Prabhupada was in Potomac, it was that coincided with the anniversary of the founding of ISKCON, which is that time in July. I forget which year it was. So, let's see. We just had the 50th, so this must have been like the 20th? 30th. It would have been the 30th year, set in 76, anniversary of ISKCON. So we brought in this great big cake, brought in front of Srila Prabhupada. And what do you do in America? Who cuts the first piece of cake? The birthday person or the honoree, right? So they handed Prabhupada a knife and a spatula. Prabhupada looked at him like he had absolutely no idea what thing we were asking him to do. Obviously, this would not be Indian culture. In Indian culture, you would serve it, and you would serve it to the guest. You wouldn't expect your guest to serve you, especially when your guest is your guru. You know. And so someone quickly explained to him the custom. And Prabhupada, oh, all right. And he did it. And that's how Prabhupada was. I mean, all right. He would go along, no false ego. No, I'm the guru. You expect me to serve? No, he said, all right, that's what we do here. And so he served, and then he gave it to somebody else. Another thing was, I'm jumping around here a lot. I was thinking when he was in Miami, I was on one morning walk, we went down to the beach, and we had a devotee there, nice devotee, but he had been a Christian, was still very attracted to Christianity, you probably know who I mean. And so he asked Prabhupada, he said, Prabhupada, this is in the middle of the morning walk. He said, is Jesus an incarnation of Lord Brahma? And Prabhupada turned to him a little startled, and it was obvious Prabhupada didn't like the question. Like, well, this is kind of off in left field. Why are you saying this? And Prabhupada said something that we couldn't quite hear. Well, we asked Shruta Kirti, who was the secretary later, and he said, oh, Prabhupada said, maybe. There's your answer. In other words, it wasn't really that important. I think is what he was trying to tell him. I think it's also interesting that the New York Rath Yatra. Is Vani not still here? Vani Vasu, I thought I saw him. Oh, there he is. I'm going to tell a story about you. And are you going to tell the story? About the guy in the fountain, the heckler? No? All right, I'll tell it on you then. Anyway, we had this person who was heckling Srila Prabhupada. And it was nasty. I mean, it really was. It wasn't just... He was like saying all kinds of awful things about Srila Prabhupada while Srila Prabhupada was saying, and all the devotees were so agitated. And finally, one devotee did what we all wanted to do. Vaninath Vasu punched the guy. The guy went flying and bounced back in the fountain. All glory to Vaninath. I heard later, oh, you heard this, right, that Prabhupada was rather amused by that. He thought it was kind of, he just smiled. In other words, it was the appropriate thing to do to protect the honor of your spiritual master. Anyway, that was a great Rath Yatra. Was that 76 here? 76 in New York? That was nice, yeah. Prabhupada was very... I'll finish with this. Prabhupada was very encouraging to devotees, to all of us. Like someone mentioned that, I think Mara said that, even by 1976 or there, I came in 72, but even by then it was hard to get to see Srila Prabhupada. By 76, 77, very, very difficult, unless you're in the inner circle. But Prabhupada was always encouraging to everybody, to women, to children, to nobody devotees like me, to everybody. And there's so many examples of this. When he was in Potomac, I think when we were in Detroit, we saw Prabhupada. I know it was. When we were in Miami, I think that my wife, Montrini, had made ice cream for Prabhupada. Another lady had made cookies with a gold leaf, and Prabhupada liked it. So when he was in Potomac, we made ice cream for Prabhupada. And we knew Prabhupada liked mango, so we made mango ice cream. When I say we, I mean my wife. Oh, she made it, obviously. So when we made ice cream, I came in at Prabhupada at night after he was finished with his darshan, and, you know, Prabhupada was kind of relaxed, a few devotees. And by that time, Shruti Kirti, by the way, was always real easy to get to see with Srila Prabhupada. He was great, you know. Harisari was there then. Harisari also was wonderful. He's a good friend of mine now. But he was a little tougher to get past him to Srila Prabhupada. He was a little more of a guardian. So anyway, I said, I've got ice cream for Srila Prabhupada that we made. And Prabhupada was actually standing there. The door was open. And he said, oh, well, he just had ice cream. New Vrindavan shipped in ice cream on dry ice from their cows. And, oh, God, I can't top that, you know. And... But Prabhupada looked over and he said, more ice cream? I said, yes, Prabhupada. And he says, what flavor? And I said, mango. He says, oh, bring it here. we did it right. So Prabhupada ate the ice cream. He said, very good. This one is the best. And he said, it is as good as something like as good as Bengali ice cream or something. I asked Maharaj by the way once, because they don't really have ice cream so much in Bengal, right? Kulfi or something. Anyway, it was a compliment, I know, right? And then it was good quality, yeah. Like Bengali, because we know Bengali sweets are the best, right? You know, some milk sweets. So anyway, probably, and he said, bring it every night. That was the easiest instruction to follow I ever got. I think it's the only instruction I ever got from Prabhupada. But one interesting thing was, and I was thinking about when Bhattaraj Prabhu was talking about how he came to front of Srila Prabhupada for the first time. It's almost like you didn't know what to say. You couldn't speak. And people might think, well, why couldn't you just speak to Srila Prabhupada? Believe me, I've been there. It was exactly like that for me. You know, they say that you feel like a fool in front of your spiritual master. Well, I became a complete fool, basically. So Srila Prabhupada asked me one other question. Well, he asked me two words. He asked me what service I did. And at that time, I think it was 1 month of my life that I was distributing big books at the airport. So I said, oh, I'm distributing big books in the airport. I would say, oh, very good. So I felt good that, you know, it was kind of the right answer at that time, because Prabhupada so much was pushing book distribution. No, but he asked me, he says, what are the ingredients? And I went totally blank. I couldn't say a word. And I couldn't remember. I had bought the ingredients. And it's a real tough menu, but, you know, I think it's milk, cream, sugar, and mangoes. Four things. I could finally, you know, I got some intelligence and I was able to answer. But that's what it was like for those of us who didn't really see Srila Prabhupada a lot, who weren't intimate with him. It was just like you were in tremendous awe. Just almost, you know, it's like you could almost not speak in front of him because he was just such a personality. And one thing I just want to say is we, the Vani is most important, and everybody can get Prabhupada's instructions, get his mercy, you can hear the tapes, you can hear the recollections, you can see him, but there was something a little special when you saw Prabhupada. I think Bhattaraj mentioned him glowing, right? Like a looking like a flower. Yes. Prabhupada had an aura. I remember the first time that we saw Srila Prabhupada in New Vrindavan in 1972, right after the installation of Radha Vrindavan Chandra. We were brand new devotees, brand new. We hadn't even joined the temple at that time. And the first time we ever saw Srila Prabhupada, it's a whole other long story, how we got to New Vrindavan, but anyway, somehow we were there, Krishna's arrangement. And Prabhupada, just as we finally found the place, came in, sat down, all these devotees, Prabhupada comes in to speak Bhagavad Gita class. And so he was speaking, and every time he would open, you know how Prabhupada would close his eyes and he'd open his eyes? When he'd open his eyes, you could practically see the beams of light coming out of his eyes. We weren't taking drugs either. No, he had that kind of presence, that kind of influence. He was an amazing personality on every possible level. And after we saw Srila Prabhupada, and I understood about 10% of what he said, to be honest, between the philosophy and his accent, I didn't really get it all. But when he was finished, when Trini and I looked at each other, said, this is our guru. This is it. And then after that, we drove out to Chicago and joined the Chicago Temple. So, and Prabhupada had that kind of effect. When you saw Srila Prabhupada, you were convinced. Convinced of the philosophy. I had read the Bhagavad Gita, and I was convinced by the Bhagavad Gita, and now I was convinced by the author that this was truly, truly my spiritual master. A couple quick things of Prabhupada's mercy, how kind he was to all devotees. Again, it was in Miami. During the afternoon, most all the devotees were out in Sankirtan, so there weren't too many devotees left. So my wife went there. My oldest daughter, Gopinath, was kind of artistic. She's a good artist, actually. And she had drawn this picture of Krishna, but she was 5 years old, 6 years old. It was kind of childlike. She had sequins glued on it. I mean, you know, it was a child's piece of art. It was a bit of Krishna. And my Trini goes in there with Gopinath, and she says, could we show Prabhupada this? And Shruti Kirti said, sure, he's not doing anything. Well, of course, Prabhupada's never doing anything. So anyway, but, you know, God bless Shruti Kirti, my friend. And so they walked in, and she gave it to him, and Prabhupada looked at it. This child's six-year-old art. He said, very great art, very great art. Of course, it was very great art because it was Krishna. We understood that, you know, and Prabhupada was so encouraging like that. And he looked at my wife and said, and who are you? And she said, my attorney said, again, how you feel like an idiot in front of your spiritual master. She forgot to even tell him her name. She said, I'm her mother. He said, okay. So that's kind of how it was when you were with Srila Prabhupada. And last story as far as his encouragement to all the women and children. And I really want everyone to understand this. And you ask any of the ladies that were around, you know, even though maybe the men were right there with Srila Prabhupada, nobody felt excluded. Everybody felt Prabhupada's mercy. It was so great. They went on this walk around the property in Miami. And again, it was mostly the women and children because we were all out in Sankirtan. And as they were, and the women and Mantrini was pushing Lalita Saki, you know, or my daughter now, who's here, in a stroller. She's about 2 years old. And she'd always seen pictures of Prabhupada, and so she knew this is Prabhupada. But she's in her little mind, she was realizing, this is actually the person that I see, that I keep telling me in these pictures. She kept going, Prabhupada, Prabhupada, and pointing at him. And finally, at the end, Prabhupada went up the steps. This is secondhand, my wife told me, I wasn't there. But he went up the steps, turned around, and said, who is that baby calling my name? And Mantrini said, oh, okay, this is her chance. So she holds her up, and Lali just held out her hands, and she said her whole body went rigid and started trembling. It was like ecstatic symptoms. And Prabhupada just said, thank you very much. And that was that. So Prabhupada's mercy was amazing. It was always there for everybody, and it remains there for us all now today. And it's been 40-some years, and I can honestly say, I honestly feel that Srila Prabhupada is here as much today as he was then, if not more. And he's in our heart, and not just in the heart of his disciples, his direct disciples, but in the heart of his grand disciples and great-grand disciples and all the devotees for 5,000 years to come. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
So Mother Shruti Rupa, and to be followed by Amarendra and Ambarish Prabhu's.